Let me tell you where your superpower comes from. It comes from your mental capacity. It comes from your thinking. It comes from the mentality that you have. Most people use less than 10% of the capacity of their brain. Your brain is a muscle, and like any other body part, if you exercise it consistently, daily, it will grow. And it will grow and it will expand and it will operate efficiently and it will fire up. So when you talk about superpowers, there are some people out here who you will meet that refuse to lose. Winning is the only option.
This is the Angles of Latitude podcast, session number 143 with founder of RMI Capital, Mark Davenport.
This is squadron leader confirming hostiles inbound. Prepare for battle.
What you're about to hear is the integration of life.
Clarity is power.
If you live each day as if it was your last, someday you'll most certainly be right.
Liberty.
We choose to go to the moon.
It's happening.
And all things geek.
Yeah, I'm not sure I know how to answer that.
You got a badass over here.
Welcome to the Angles of Latitude podcast.
Hey everyone, thanks for listening in. I'm your host, JC Preston, founder of New Inceptions. If this is the first time you're listening in, this is the show where we bring you life lessons or a message from successful entrepreneurs, athletes, experts, and artists to help you find and execute your own personal mission and live a lifestyle that you're proud of. Today's chat is one that I'm glad I had the chance to have not too long ago. And as you'll hear in the conversation, one of the first co-hosts I had on the show was a dude by the name of John Ridge. And at the time, he was still going to Ball State University, double majoring in finance and accounting. And actually, I had the opportunity to get to know him as a student while I was teaching at the junior college level. Anyway, ever since I knew John, he had a plan and he knew what he wanted to accomplish, and he's actually done it. And he now works on Wall Street as a young investor, and I'm not entirely sure what his title is, but he's very happy with what he's doing and will be continuing to do so in the foreseeable future. Today's guest, Mark Davenport, started off the same way. Early on in his career, he started off as an investor on Wall Street. But he didn't stop there. And in fact, he started several businesses which have allowed him to meet and work with all kinds of individuals, ranging from people in the film world to other big names in other industries. In this chat, we'll learn how he managed to go from Wall Street to building his current business, RMI Capital, and what he's learned along the way about relationships. More specifically, we'll be getting into how he got the opportunity to actually work on Wall Street, what prompted him to start his first business after having his early success, and what superpower he believes people like past guest Antonio Smith possess and how they use it as a benefit in their lives. But before we get to that, I want to tell you a little bit about Uncover Your Personal Mission, the Personal Mission Guide. And as you'll hear in today's chat, moving forward in any industry is about relationships, and you build those relationships by being of value to other people. In fact, you'll hear that it's best to just add value whenever possible, and eventually, after adding a lot of value, maybe you'll ask for a favor. Let me ask you this: how can you be of value to others? What do you want to be known for? Finding your personal mission will help you answer these questions. And through this guide, I think you'll certainly find some great ideas to help you start moving yourself in the right direction. You can download it today for free by going to newinceptions.com/personal mission guide. Again, that's newinceptions.com/personal mission guide. All right. So before we get started, I want to remind you guys that I'm archiving the old sessions of the show. If you want to access these classic conversations, check out the Patreon page at patreon.com/newinceptions. And also don't forget to subscribe and comment on the show via whatever platform you listen to the podcast on. Doing so helps other people find the show, which means we can help them do more fulfilling work as well. Show notes and show note extras of this conversation can be found at newinceptions.com/143. And as usual, I'll be on after the show to fill you in on anything we might have missed. Hey everyone, welcome back to the show. I'm your host, JC Preston. And, you know, since it's the beginning of the new year, I'm glad we have this opportunity to actually talk to today's guest because, you know, with a new year comes new opportunities. And those opportunities might be things an entrepreneur or a founder want to act on, but it might not be in the organization's best interest. And there might be some blind spots about going after whatever it is that they're going to be trying to implement into their business or their organization. And that's where today's guest plays a role. For over four decades, he has been a trusted advisor, business strategist, and financial consultant, helping CEOs launch, build, and grow profitable businesses and investment portfolios. His story starts almost actually 35 years ago when he started his career as a registered investment advisor in Wall Street. And as an investor, he was a contributor to the Wilmington Journal's Hot Stock Tips and Ask the Experts investment columns. Also, he did market commentary for Philadelphia Daily News, Philadelphia Inquirer, the Black Suburban Journal, and Next Level Magazine. Fast forward to 2005, he exited the investment industry to form his first company, Davenport Consulting. In fact, his first client was Lee Daniels, the award-winning producer of Monsters Ball. And then in 2008, our guest formed RMI Capital, where he shares 34-plus years of business and investment experience with the next generation of up-and-coming CEOs. Today, I'm talking with Mark Davenport, who can be found on the webs, Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook as Mark E. Davenport. Mark, thanks for joining us today. How are you doing?
Very good. And let me tell you, JC, it's an honor and a privilege to spend some time. I appreciate the opportunity.
So getting right into it, your career started off being a Wall Street investment advisor and a past student of mine, turned friend, and then he actually ended up being one of the first co-hosts of this show. John Ridge has become actually an investor in his very early career as well on Wall Street. He seems to enjoy it quite a bit. It's something that he's always been working towards through college and even, I think, high school. And it's definitely a change of atmosphere than what he's used to here in the Midwest. Very grueling. And I think that a lot of people will understand what it's like because they've seen movies like The Pursuit of Happiness or Wolf of Wall Street. And it's just a lot of hustle. You know, he doesn't see himself as being there forever. But while he's young, he wants to, you know, get out there and make the connections and all that fun stuff. What initially got you interested in going down that particular path yourself?
Well, that's a great story. And originally, I wanted to follow my middle brother's footsteps and go to law school. But my parents passed when I was in college. And that was an opportunity that just didn't become available. So my oldest brother was a very successful commodities trader for a company called Siegel Trading on Wall Street. And I've always had a really good aptitude for numbers. I was always very good with money. And so I thought that the best place for me to launch my career was where the money is and where tremendous opportunities was. So for me, it was a no-brainer. The thing is, when I went to the street, I'll tell you, the biggest challenge that I had, JC, was I didn't know anybody with any money. I didn't know anybody with any money. And, you know, the wealth management business is about assets under management. And during that time, the industry was still following a transactional business. So if you did about $1 million in gross revenue, your payout was 40% of that and you became a vice president. And so the goal was to gather assets, because if you don't have any assets under management, to starve to death, then you'll be out on the street looking for a new career.
What kind of doors do you think that being in that situation opened up for you over the years?
Well, you know what? It changed my life. You know, I went to my brother and I said, I don't know anybody with any money, so what do I do? And he said, wealthy people buy munis. Wealthy people buy municipal bonds because of the triple tax exemption. If you live in a city like New York, not only is your Uncle Sam in your pocket on the federal side, but you pay a state income tax. And then you also pay a city income tax. And, you know, living in Texas, you don't pay a city or a state tax. So wealthy people buy municipal bonds. And so I learned how to compute yield. I learned the significance of taxable equivalent. In other words, what would someone have to earn in a tax-free environment that would be the equivalent of a taxable environment. But the real big takeaway for me was simply working with wealthy people, understanding how they manage money, how they made money, but more importantly, how they treated money.
Yes, I'm sure that's really great information to have. And a lot of people don't have that insight. And, you know, I'm sure that that's part of the reason why you've been able to be as successful in your career as you have. I mean, you're learning so much and getting to know all this stuff. What made you leave a relatively high profile position and start your own consulting gig?
Well, it's interesting because for most of my career, I was considered a smart guy, intelligent, someone who made really good decisions. And I was invited to attend the annual MBNA party, the MBNA, the old credit card bank card. And it had a huge party every year. And so I was making the rounds and I ran into my good friend, Olivia Stoner, who's the Registrar of Wills in the city of Philadelphia. And she said, "Mark, I've got somebody I want you to meet. Mark, let me introduce you to Lee Daniels." And I was probably the only one in the room who didn't know who he was. So we shook hands. I wished him well. Said was happy to meet him. And I turned and I was, you know, going to meet and greet my friends. And she said, "Mark, I told Lee the only person who can help him is you." So now she had my attention because Olivia Stoner has been a great friend to me and a colleague, and she's excellent at what she does. So we started talking. And this guy, his energy on a 1 to 10 scale was probably a 50. He was focused and adamant and all in on securing an option on a book by an author called Sapphire called Push. He was trying to raise $35,000. He was asking me for my help. And I looked at him like he was nuts. I said, "Lee, Monsters Ball is the most profitable film in Hollywood. It single-handedly took Lionsgate out of the red for 8 quarters into the black. And you made this film for $2 million. It's grossed $80 million U.S. You got everybody to take back in. Cut a check and go on about your business." Well, he couldn't. He didn't have it. And so I said, "Lee, I can't go to the street and ask for $35,000. He said, "Why not?" I said, "If I went to the street and asked people and raised $35,000 for you, they would be more focused on why you weren't doing that on your own than the deal itself. It would be a distraction."
Right.
Right. Yeah. You know, I mean, you're the executive producer of the most profitable film in Hollywood. You're making a lot of money. And I didn't know anything about the film business, although my oldest friend has been in the film business for 30-odd years. So we started talking, and then I found out that he had a talent agency. His number one actor on his roster was Wes Bentley, and he said, "Mark, my dream is I want to own a catalog of great movies. I want to own a catalog, a library of great films." And the advisor in me started to come out. Because then I started thinking, long-term annuitized revenue. I could leverage that. So we started talking and we wound up putting a deal together to raise $4.5 million to raise the fledgling Lee Daniels Entertainment. And so the brokerage business is a jealous business. Never wants to share your time, energy, and effort with another one. And there are certain restrictions on you. So there was no way that I could do this and still keep my role in the business. So I formed my first company, Davenport Consulting, and Lee Daniels became my first client. And over maybe a 5-year run, I had an opportunity to work with a lot of people in the film industry.
Wow. That is a great, and it's just amazing. Like so many people who try this whole solopreneur thing thinks it's because that's how it is in the working world. When they make that transition, they think it's all on them. And so many, especially in the world that we live in today, where you have all these connections online, but they're so superficial that you really can't leverage them to find opportunities like you got with that. That's how it's done, folks. I mean, you have to know people. She had to know you good enough to be able to introduce you to Lee. And you know, you just can't find that online.
And by the way, Sapphire's book Push 6 years later became the movie Precious.
Oh, okay. Dang. Okay. So you were in that particular doing Davenport Consulting for 5 years. Why did you move to what you have now, which is RMI Capital? Because you, again, I mean, you're killing it in Wall Street, and then you were killing it with the Davenport Consulting, and had those great opportunities, and now you're on to something else. So what was that transition about?
Well, in between, there were a number of other ventures that I had launched and I had started. And one of the things that I realized is from working and being exposed to wealthy people is that they are not beholden or reliant on one particular revenue stream. And so I began to understand that the more balls you have in play, the more opportunities you have to make money, you just do it. Right. You just do it. And do you mind if I take a step back just to piggyback on something you said earlier?
Go for it.
So I do a live show on Facebook on Tuesday. And when you just talked about the relationship, let me say this. Relationships are everything. Right. Relationships are everything. And people do business with people that they know, love, respect, and trust. You know, I got a call one day at 8 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday from a very good friend of mine, owns a phenomenal business. And he sent me a message, rather. And he said he had a good friend of his that had a meeting at 11 o'clock with some investors about raising money for her nonprofit. She had worked very diligently to get to this point. So it was the big day. Saturday was the big day for her to sit down with the investment community to pitch and to secure funds for her nonprofit. But unfortunately, her financial advisor, their father, had a stroke and he couldn't make it. So the biggest day of her life, and her advisor couldn't make it. So he reached out to me and asked if I could ride with her to the meeting and act on her on her behalf as her advisor. Right. Mm-hmm. But here's the thing. At 10 o'clock in 2 hours, I was teaching a class on the sources of capital for your business. And it was a commitment I made to a community that's underserviced, and I promised that I would be there. So I couldn't. And so I told her and I explained to her what was going on. And then I made a call, and I called a friend of mine who happens to own a hedge fund. And I said, I would really appreciate if you could ride with this person and sit in on her behalf. Now, this is a guy with an Ivy League undergrad, MBA, and JD. This is a guy with impeccable credentials.
Pedigree, right.
And he said, Mark, my son has a football game today. And I said, I understand if you can't make it. And I had, in the interim, I made some calls to find someone to fill in and cover me on the workshop if I couldn't find someone. And so he called me back and he said, look, my spouse is going to cover my son. I'll be there. So I called this young lady who I never met, never spoke to. And she said, Mark Davenport, why are you helping me like this? I don't even know you. And I said, because so-and-so is my friend. He reached out to me at 8 o'clock in the morning and asked me to help you. So I did. And my colleague agreed to help you because I asked him to help me, and he did. So, wrapping this up, at the workshop, I met a fellow, and we've been joined at the hip every year, ever since, rather. And I was able to go back to my guy and connect him with someone, and they're working on structuring a $100 million transaction. It all falls into place. So, relationships are everything. I helped this woman because my colleague asked me to. My guy helped me because I asked him to. $100 million opportunity came to me, and you know what? Yeah, I could have figured out a way to do it myself, but why? Why would I? Why would I not make sure it was done the right way by the right guy? So I put those two together. So the circle has to be small, because not everybody is that trustworthy and loyal. And not everybody has the capability and the skills necessary to execute like that on a high level. So not trying to be long-winded. I'm sorry.
That was a great insight. So going back into your chronological story here. RMI Capital, you're doing so well over here with Davenport Consulting. Why the branding and name change to RMI?
I had a company. So I have a board of directors. It's title only. The youngest is 62. And these are people who are retired or still active or successful, have made a lot of money. And they are my mentors and role models. And with one exception, I've never made a significant business decision or personal decision without first consulting with them. And so I had a business, and the business was one of the reasons why I came to Texas. And it was a good business. And I decided that I was going to change my name. And instead of going to the Secretary of State and applying or going to the local county courthouse and spending $10 for a DBA, I dissolved the company, formed a new one. And when I dissolved the company, what I did was I dissolved all of the agreements and protections I had in place with other businesses that I was collaborating with. And what happened was the very next day, one of my former partners sent a certified letter to the son and owner of a major sports franchise and said, I'm the guy doing this. He's not doing anything. And it cost me a business.
Yeah.
It cost me a business.
Wow.
And it cost me a business. It cost me a lot of money. All because I didn't pick up the phone and follow protocol and call my board of advisors, explain what I was going, what I wanted to do, and have them guide me and instruct me on the right way to do that.
Yeah.
And that, and I will tell you that impact that the fallout from on that took its toll in ways that you can't even imagine.
Yeah. Wow. No. And it's always funny how 2020 hindsight, how it's like, oh yeah, I should have asked for help here, or asked for help there. But you know, as you're going down the path, you're essentially experimenting, because as I was talking with one of my mentors yesterday, these business things, quote unquote, are designed to fail so often. And it's because of the experimental journey. You never know why you're in the moment, and then it's like, oh yeah, should have done that. But yeah, look at you now. So, you know, that was some really expensive education. We'll look at it that way.
It was painful. It was painful.
So RMI Capital, who are your ideal clients for that? Who are you looking to help with that?
That's interesting, because my commercial client profile is a company that's doing north of $20 million in revenue, preferably a company that has a CFO or a VP of finance that's generating enough revenue to do that. And so some of the things we like to do, we like to come on site and do a very deep analysis. And we really take pride in the fact that we can improve cash flow. So we hang our hats on three things. You know, we want to improve your cash flow. We want to improve your operational performance, grow revenue, top line growth. But we also want to increase shareholder value, because we know at some point in time, you're either going to sell your company, and that's right, your retirement nest egg. You're either building something as a legacy to pass on for the next generation, or you want to be strong enough from a cash flow perspective to go out and buy market share or acquire companies. Or finally, you want to build something so significant that one day you want to stand in front of the New York Stock Exchange and ring the bell. And so what we do is we leverage our 35-plus years of business experience and $400 million in deal flow to deliver real solutions that will improve the operational performance and financial results of the companies that we service.
Well, I'll have to connect you to some past guests. I know that you know Antonio, who is a mutual friend of ours, but definitely some good people I can introduce to you. One of the things you were just talking about, revenue flow. And I noticed that in your YouTube channel, you covered this. You also covered the five C's of credit. Mm-hmm. Can you give us a little bit of feeler for, you know, what people can find in either one of those videos, and really who needs to know it the most?
So everybody does. Because first of all, if you're in the pre-launch stage and you're looking to acquire capital to launch, you're either going to have to secure equity, debt, or a combination of the two. And the decision that the street will make to fund you is going to be based on your cash flow projections, right? There are other factors. Character is one, personality is the other, team, mission, viability of the opportunity, et cetera. But most of the time is going to be focused on, is the company, is the model going to generate sufficient cash flow to make it worth my while? Number two, if you're a mid-market company, if you're in a growth phase, you're going to need to acquire capital or some sort of debt financing, some sort of structure to fuel your growth, right? And in order to do that, I believe the greatest way to become more profitable is to run your business more efficiently, right?
Yeah.
The best way to improve cash flow is to turn over your receivables. So there's a credit term we use called DSO. The acronym stands for Day Sales Outstanding. It's the number of days it takes to convert your receivables to cash. So to give you an example, standard terms are net 30 days, depending on the vertical. So if your terms are net 30 days, if your DSO is 30 days, you're getting paid what? On time. But that's not reality. No one operates like that. So if your DSO, for example, is if your terms are 30 and your DSO is 60, think about the impact that's going to have on your cash flow. If your terms are net 30 and your DSO is 90, the impact is so significant, a bank or a lender will look at your ACE trial balance and flag any receivable on your trial balance that is aged 90 days or longer. You don't get credit for it. It's considered a charge-off.
Yeah. And in the rest of the world, that's going to have a negative impact on your credit if you were to do that as a regular citizen. So, yeah.
It's the flow game. And I'll tell you something. I know a lot of coaches, advisors, that train their clients. Don't remit to anybody until that receivable drops into your 90-day bucket. Mm. Cash is king, my friend. Mm-hmm. Float your boat until you have to drain it.
Wow, that's a good point. Going back to Antonio real quick. Mm-hmm. We had him on as a guest on Straight to the Top, which is your Facebook Live show. Mm-hmm. In that interview, he talks about the idea that if you want to be rich, you can't get there by actually getting a day job. And this is something that I learned about just as I was about to graduate college, and I'm shooting myself in the foot. I'm like, okay, how do I turn this ship around? And that's how I kind of got lured into Amway and learning about entrepreneurship and all that stuff. But 10 years later, I look at someone like Antonio, who at the same time was kind of going through this spin of options and kind of just treading water in life. And, you know, what's it been like for you to watch someone like him get to where he's at in such a relatively short period of time, really?
Well, here's the thing, and this is what I love about Antonio Smith, right? The title of that show was, If You Want to Be Rich, Don't Get a Job. Mm-hmm. And in the opening monologue, when he introduced himself and he told his story, Antonio T. Smith Jr. didn't have a mother, didn't have a father, didn't have a home, didn't have a bed. His home was a dumpster. He used to sleep in a dumpster. So what I love and value and appreciate about Antonio is he's removed all of the barriers to success. Who could possibly have an excuse? Who could possibly not be motivated? Who could possibly not be willing to do whatever necessary to do to become successful after hearing that story? Antonio T. Smith Jr. he's taking every single excuse anyone could bring and taking it off the table.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that is interesting to me is that he, because he has the network in place to ask questions, and then he finds the answers, and then he gives those answers to the people who follow him. I mean, you want to talk about a servant leader? That, I mean, he's just, you know, if me coming from a John Maxwell perspective, it's, he's getting it done. I mean, that's exactly how you're supposed to execute things. So, yeah, it's him having that fire comes from the fact that he was living in, sleeping in dumpsters. And I think that there's something to be said about people being too comfortable and not having ever really learning or practicing the skill to get it done, get done, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. But then there's also, like in his situation, or people that have, you know, maybe they've tried multiple businesses, end up having to sleep in their car, and then they eventually make it. I mean, that I think that that experience actually gives people a somewhat of a superpower to actually get through the tough times and achieve more. That's just my perspective.
Well, you know what? It's interesting. You used the phrase superpower. Let me tell you what makes people like him, like you. Let me tell you where your superpower comes from. It comes from your mental capacity. It comes from your thinking. It comes from the mentality that you have. Most people use less than 10% of the capacity of their brain. Your brain is a muscle, and like any other body part, if you exercise it consistently, daily, it will grow. And it will grow, and it will expand, and it will operate efficiently, and it will fire up. So when you talk about superpowers, there are some people out here who you will meet that refuse to lose. Winning is the only option. This morning, I was listening to someone that was talking about the Duke basketball team. Mm-hmm. And Coach K's mantra is, every season, every year when we start the season, we have one goal. Bill Belichick, we have one goal. That goal is to win the Super Bowl. Anything other than that is unacceptable and a failure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was just talking about Bill Belichick. And because they've won it so many times, it's easy to implant that destination in the next crop of players and the next roster. And they always, I mean, they have that benefit of being able to see the end. Like, you know, there's one thing to be like, conceptually, you know, I've been part of a team that, you know, we got there once and it was because of a fluke, but it's because of those systems. You were talking about systems earlier and being more efficient. It's because of those systems. Tom Brady might be a system quarterback, whatever. Point being is that those systems and Coach K implements in his team get him repeatedly to the championship.
The New England Patriots have a culture they call the Patriot Way. And what that means is no single player is bigger than the team. Just stop and think about all the talent Belichick has had that he got rid of. Right. Mm-hmm. If you don't fit in, if it's not about team, if you're not willing to do the things necessary to win, we don't want you. Because leadership, a culture of excellence, starts at the top. It's a commitment. It's easy to cheat. It's easy to cut corners. It's easy to mimic and try to follow what someone else is doing. And a lot of teams have tried to do that. There's a reason why he's consistently excellent. In the 20 years that Brady's been a quarterback, 10 of those years he's played in the Super Bowl and he's won 6.
It's true. Me being a Colts fan, I understand the work that goes into it. And I've actually put this in the blog several times. I'm glad we're on this topic. Watching successful NFL teams, because the way that everybody has to execute at once is such a good case study of leadership and how the front office and everything down works together as a machine. Yeah, it's good stuff. One of the things that Harrison would kill me if I didn't ask you about is that you're a member of so many organizations outside of what you do during the day with RMI. Why is being involved in the community so important to you?
I am a reflection of all of the talent, knowledge, and experience that has been poured into me. And I'm tasked with ensuring that I do homage to these people. And I'm tasked by making sure that my legacy will never be about success and money, but more on what was the impact, who did you help, and how many lives did you change? So I'm child number 8 out of 10. Mm. I started out from very humble beginnings. My parents had 3 sets of twins. They figured out a way to give us all a college education. And I grew up in a housing project 3 blocks from the Brooklyn Bridge. And I can't tell you how many people poured into me. So there are things you do for money, but there are things you do for service. And there are things you do so that you can sleep good at night knowing that you just changed the life of a person because you offered them a word of encouragement, because you told them they were great, they were fabulous, they were excellent, they were wonderful, they were handsome, they were beautiful. Words have great power, and I try to use them wisely, and I use them to lift people up. And so service to me is important. Because at the end of the day, I want to be recognized for being a person who left everything they had poured into people so heavily that when he left this place, he was empty. He had nothing left. He gave it all away. Mm. Don't know if I answered your question or not, but that's the best that I can come up with.
Totally, totally. And in fact, when Antonio finally makes it up here, you should come up here with him and go to our Amplify event, which is where we celebrate community, culture, and commerce and how they interact with each other. Because it's something to go to an event where they talk about tech entrepreneurship and here are the pitches and all this sort of stuff. But it's something completely different to highlight what you were just talking about and the engagement. And the willingness for people to get together and actually develop solutions within the community.
Well, you know what? Look at Bill and Melissa Gates. Mm. Bill and Melissa Gates are known more now for their philanthropic work than what he did over at Microsoft. Bill and Melissa Gates has saved the lives of millions of people around the planet by doing what he's doing. And he created a model for service and for charitable contributions that should be commended. So he's known more as a humanitarian than for being the world's richest man. I mean, than being America's second richest man now after Jeff Bezos.
Right, right. Well, growing up, it was always Bill Gates and, he was the Microsoft mogul and then ended up now today, I think kids are looking at, I wouldn't say they're looking up to Jeff, but maybe Elon, as kind of the entrepreneur that everybody knows. But yeah, totally. And it's such a great example, him and Warren Buffett and all these other types who basically have agreed that they're not going to, I'm sure they'll leave a little bit to their kids, but they want to go out putting out enough of those funds that they've made in their lifetime to make a difference for, centuries and generations.
So. They've won in business and all they're really doing now is just cementing what they want their legacy to be. And they want their legacy to be a legacy of giving.
Right. That's so cool. Since we are in 2019, a lot of people already have their plan figured out for the year. I know in the event world, you plan things out for a year, actually. What are some of the things that you're looking to do in 2019 that has you excited and looking forward to?
I've never really done anything on an international level.
Mm.
Just haven't. That's going to change in Q2 of this year. In a big way. I have a trip planned for about 2 weeks. I'll be visiting 7 different countries.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll be exposed to, I don't know, maybe $1 billion worth of commerce. And so April is this trip, I believe, is going to change my life in so many ways, on so many levels. And it will enable me to position myself as an international business leader. And that's something I've never really thought about. But mm-hmm. because of some relationships that I have and the confidence and trust that some people have in me, there's some things happening that they really want me to be a part of. And it's a humbling experience. And I don't talk about it. And there's only really 3 people in the U.S. that even know anything about it. And it'll probably stay that way. Because when you get to be my age, you can appreciate moving in silence and simply letting your body of work speak for you.
Mm. Yeah. Well, I think that's definitely a lost art that I've seen, is that, you know, you have a lot of these millennial entrepreneurs, what we can call that, or maybe a little bit older, that throw everything that they're doing on the socials and hyping themselves up, and it makes sense. I mean, it's a strategy for marketing, but if you have, going back to what we were talking about in the earlier part of this conversation, if you have those deep relationships with people that can actually help you get to where you're wanting to go, why spend time making new friends as opposed to cultivating the relationships you already have?
Now you're talking about professional maturity.
So, yeah, it is interesting. You know, what would you rather have? You know, this is one of the questions that recently came up in one of my blog posts. It's like, what would you rather have, 100,000 Instagram followers or 1,000, you know, raving fans, or 100 people that you know that have a lot of connections, or 10 people that you know have twice as many connections, or 10 times, you know? And it's just, what's going to get you the most business? And a lot of times the answer is not 100,000 Instagram followers.
Absolutely. And you know what? I just got on Facebook 10 months ago. Mm. I got on Instagram in December. And quite frankly, those platforms aren't really that important to me. I think I posted something on Facebook a couple of weeks ago. I'm going to be winding down. I probably still will do the live once a week. But, you know, for what I want to do, for the people that, you know, that I'm connected with, they don't exist on Facebook.
No.
And it's an alter reality. And it's sort of like almost the Matrix. And you know what? I've been able to reconnect with some people I haven't seen, heard, or talked to in 30, 40 years. And I'm grateful for that. But for me, it would be purely social, nothing to do with business.
Yeah, for sure. That's why I was able to take a 3-month or so detox from Facebook and come out being like, oh, I feel much better. Thanks. Before we wrap up today's conversation, I'm going to go through the rapid fire question segment. And the first question I have for you, what are 3 of your top favorite books that you gift or tell others about?
The first and foremost, How to Win Friends and Influence People. Number 2 would be the classic by Reginald Lewis, Why Should White Guys Have All the Fun? And he was the first Wall Street corporate raider. He was the first black billionaire in America. It wasn't Bob Johnson who owned BET. And the chapter in his book on his first $100,000 a month, that really, really resonated with me. And then the third book would be the first book that my father ever gave me, which was Og Mandingo's The Greatest Salesman in the World.
Yeah. Love it. There was another one that was out around his time. not Dale Carnegie. What was the other Dale? Oh, shoot. But I think it was Oggs. Oh, well, I'll just leave it there.
And you know what?
Earl Nightingale was his name. That was.
Yeah. And he sort of reminded me of Paul Harvey. And I think he might have wrote the book As a Man Thinketh. I think that might have been one of his books. I'm not sure. There's a fourth book, too, which is the autobiography. There's two autobiographies. John D. Rockefeller was one and J.P. Morgan was the other. And the thing about J.P. Morgan, he wasn't as wealthy as a lot of his contemporaries, but he was the most powerful man during his time outside of John D. Rockefeller. You know John D. Rockefeller's family, John D. Rockefeller Jr., gifted the land, which is known as Yellowstone National Park, to the United States government.
Did not know that, but I did. There was a miniseries a few years back that was called Men Who Built America. Yeah. Really insightful. One of my favorite series that I ever saw. But next question. When you become overwhelmed or unfocused, what do you do?
I work out every day. I read a good book. And if I find myself getting to that point before I get there, I ask for help or start saying no.
What are some of the things that you've started saying no to?
Some people ask me to sit on some boards. I said no to because it wasn't a good fit. Some people asked me if I could work with them, and I said no. Because they didn't have any money. And it wasn't so much the fact that they didn't have any money, but these are people that are classic time wasters. You know, these are people that I used to term vampires. And if you're not careful, vampires will suck your time out of you. They'll suck all of your energy because they take. They don't give. They don't nourish you. And so I've been saying no to a lot of people who come at you out of the blue and just ask you for things without any consideration of asking what can they do for you.
Yeah. And simple, you know, just building relationship stuff really before you even have an ask is just the way that you have to approach life that way. I mean, if you don't, you're never going to get too far. We'll say it that way.
It's a rookie move. And as a general rule, I never ask anybody for anything until I've done something for them first.
Right.
And I don't ask anybody. So I have a room full of markers. If I called someone and put out a distress call, they'd probably faint.
That's powerful. What's the best advice that you've ever received?
Your income will reflect the clientele that you service.
Interesting. Not the other way around.
And never. And it takes a lifetime to build a quality name and reputation. Never say or do anything that will put your character, your name, your reputation, your family name at risk.
Love it. And a final question. What's it mean to live a life of abundance?
Abundance means different things to different people. And I'm at a point in time in my life where being happy and living a peaceful existence and being healthy is really what's important. I know people with a lot of money and they have a medicine cabinet full of prescription drugs. I know people who are financially very well off, but their health is terrible. They don't have relationships with their children. You know what? As you get older, you realize, as you mature, you realize what's really, really, really important. I'm blessed. I have some people that care about me. I care about them. I have a good family. I have a lot to be grateful for. So I think people sometimes should take a step back, count their blessings, and think about all they have in their life that they are grateful for or should be grateful for.
Yeah, and to reiterate that point, I was just watching, we were talking about Netflix before the interview, and we just watched a comedy special last night. Ray Romano, first time that he was doing live comedy, And he brought up the same thing, is that there's this different things that he has in his late 50s now that he has completely more appreciation for than he did as he was growing up. Mark, thank you again so much for spending some time with me today. People, again, can find you on the interwebs if they search Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter for Mark E. Davenport. And it was a pleasure, man.
You know what? It was, the pleasure is all mine. I'd love to have you on my show, and looking forward to hanging out with you guys in Indiana. And hopefully the event will take place in the spring or summer.
All right. Thank you much.
Have a great day.
All right, there you have it. I hope you enjoyed that great interview with Mark. You know, he's definitely an awesome resource, and I can understand how he's been able to make such an impact in people's lives. Several times in the conversation, I found myself wanting to, you know, know more about what he was actually talking about. And, you know, big time investing is something that I've always had an interest in. So in the show note extras for this session, I'm going to be including the videos I referred to in the conversation, as well as one that I'm pretty sure was partly inspired by this conversation we had today. So in the first video, you learn about the five C's of credit and how they play a role in growing your business. After that, I'll have one where he illustrates how you can double your revenue. And then, of course, I have the one with Antonio Smith, who, again, was a recent guest of the show. And in it, they talk about why a job will never allow you to be wealthy. And finally, in the fourth video, you'll learn some pretty awesome tidbits of information about networking and building connections with influential people. So enjoy those videos and get a preview of what you can expect to hear from Mark on his YouTube channel. All kinds of really great stuff. So that's it for session 143, guys. Remember, if you want to be of value to people, you have to know things or offer services that are specialized just for them. For you to develop that specialization, it will help to find your personal mission. Get the guide, Uncover Your Personal Mission, today at newinceptions.com/personal-mission-guide to get started on your own true path. Again, thank you for spending a little bit of time with Mark and I today. Always appreciate having you here. And until next session, dig in, have fun, and take care in whatever you're creating. And we'll see you back here next time.
Thanks for listening to the Angles of Latitude podcast. Connect with us at home, at work, or on the go at facebook.com/newinceptions, on Twitter at newinceptions, Instagram at new.inceptions, and on the web at newinceptions.com.